Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The legislative session hasn't even started, and already the House and Senate are squaring up for a fight on health care reform.
I mean, something clearly is not working, and adding more money to that won't help.
Also this week, it's not only health care that's ramping up controversy at the Capitol. Battles are brewing when it comes to education.
I am 100% against arming teachers. It doesn't make sense.
And we haven't even touched on the environment, Hurricane Michael recovery, marijuana legislation, assignment of insurance benefits, or a host of other potentially combustible topics. We're just days away from the start of the 2019 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. As healthcare continues to take up a larger and larger slice of the state's budget, House Speaker Jose Oliva has set his eyes on market reform. Sean Mulcahy has more on the battle over healthcare privatization, affordability, and access.
Just moments after being sworn in as the next Speaker of the House, Hialeah Republican Jose Oliva outlined a key legislative priority.
When I got elected in 2011, healthcare was 33% of our budget. That was pretty alarming back then. This year will be 48. I mean, something clearly is not working, and adding more money to that won't help.
One of the biggest ways to bring costs down, according to Oliva, is expanding patients' access to care. This is especially true in rural North Florida and low-income communities where hospitals and doctors are sparse. A solution lawmakers keep coming back to is affording nurse practitioners more discretion. Here's Oliva again.
That's an issue of access. If you let people be able to practice to the extent of their training, you will create greater access in the rural areas and in other areas that maybe doctors cannot get to.
Tampa Republican Senator Jeff Brandis is leading this charge in the Senate, and the House effort is being carried by Sebring Republican Representative Carrie Pigman. Keeping with legislation to expand access is a measure aimed at broadening services offered by ambulatory surgical centers. Commonly known as outpatient surgery centers, they provide less serious care than hospitals, and they're required to discharge patients on the same working day. But a measure filed by Stewart Republican Senator Gail Harrell would allow these centers to keep patients for up to 24 hours.
Thank you very much, members, and I think this is a very important step forward. It's going to truly reduce costs. It will reduce our Medicaid costs by allowing those patients not to be transferred when they really don't need to be transferred.
Speaker Oliva also hopes to scale back on a regulatory requirement known as Certificate of Need. Certain healthcare providers, like hospitals and nursing homes, have to apply for state approval before they're allowed to add or expand services. The state has cut down on many of these requirements over the last two decades, and the House is poised to hear another rollback proposal this session. Oliva has spoken out against what he calls the hospital industrial complex, but the measure could face friction in the Senate. Senate President Bill Galvano is taking a more balanced approach, and he urges caution. And finally, there is Governor Ron DeSantis' priority. He's largely interested in reducing the cost of prescription drugs.
Basically, what we're going to be doing is recognizing that some of these same drugs, if you were just in Canada, would be a fraction of the price that we pay here. I'll be working with the Trump administration and the legislature to create a prescription drug importation program to bring Floridians less expensive FDA-approved prescription drugs from Canada.
DeSantis hopes this will shrink state spending on Medicaid and on prescriptions for prisoners. Galvano, however, is less optimistic.
I'm all about safe, more affordable prescriptions, but we have to be cautious that we're not trying to legislate at the state level that which is the province of the federal government.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sean Mulcahy.
So health care is just one volatile matter facing Florida lawmakers. Let's talk about another. Heading into the legislative session, state lawmakers on either side of the aisle are not seeing eye to eye on education. Ryan Daly reports school choice and school safety remain polarizing issues.
Governor Ron DeSantis held a press conference after the Florida Cabinet's last meeting before the legislative session. On K-12 education, DeSantis kept to his consistent message, expand choice in all its forms.
I also think that the parents should have access to public schools that are not run by the school district because you have an opportunity to try new things. I just spoke at the Latin Builders Association luncheon last week. They run an LBA academy that's focusing on the construction trades and the business side and in terms of the skilled workforce, and I think it's been successful.
Comments from Florida's Senate and House leaders in the weeks leading up to session have them seemingly in lockstep with the governor's priorities. House Speaker Jose Oliva outlined his education priorities during the Associated Press's legislative preview.
For years, we've pursued a path of the money following the child. We think that that's important. It has nothing to do with teachers. It has nothing to do with public versus private or public charter or traditional public.
Chair of the Senate Education Committee Manny Diaz Jr. has filed a bill that looks to help fulfill one of DeSantis's chief campaign promises, pushing 80% of K-12 spending into the classroom.
I think what we saw, you know, over the past maybe 30 years is we saw different philosophies where school districts, especially large ones, just got bloated administratively.
Diaz says his bill looks to put teachers more in control of the available resources. He adds defining in-classroom spending at the legislative level is key to making that 80% a reality. But he says it's not going to happen overnight.
I think an 80% goal is not a one-year goal. I think what you look at starting something that will get us there within the next 4 years.
Diaz and his fellow Senate Republicans are pushing a new scholarship program that would pay for more low-income families to enroll their children in private schools. The scholarship would be funded using the Florida Education Finance Program, the main funding mechanism for public schools. If the legislation passes, the scholarship would be capped at 15,000 recipients to start. Senate leaders are also backing the expansion of community schools in areas of high need, which provide wraparound services, including health care and counseling. Members of the Senate Democratic Caucus largely condemned the Republican education package. Senate Democratic leader-designate Gary Farmer calls it the final stage of a decades-long plan to privatize public education in Florida. School safety also promises to be among the principal issues in education this session. That puts all eyes on the Guardian program, which lawmakers created last year with the intent to arm public school teachers. Senator Diaz briefed reporters on plans to expand the program.
And we received the report of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Public Service Commission, and we took upon that some changes involving school security, hardening, funding flexibility, and also expansion and flexibility with the Guardian program to match what is going on across the state.
But not all districts across the state are so eager to comply. Pinellas Sheriff Bob Gualtieri, who chairs the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Commission, said some districts aren't participating in various aspects of the program.
One of the school boards in the state is having a discussion about whether it's a good idea to have threat assessment teams. Seriously? It's in the law that you will have them, and they're having a discussion about whether they think they should have them.
Democratic legislators are taking steps to give districts an out. Senator Janet Cruz of Hillsborough County has filed legislation that would have all counties receiving school safety money, regardless of their compliance with the Guardian program. That money would be prioritized to boost district school resource officer programs. For House Minority Leader Keone McGee, the idea of arming teachers hits close to home.
I am 100% against arming teachers. It doesn't make sense, especially when you live in a household with a teacher who constantly reminds you that it is very dangerous as it is now when scissors are thrown across the classroom. But the only to add into that mix, a firearm that can dislodge projectiles that cause bodily harm is wrong.
Legislators will convene for the start of the 2019 session Tuesday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Daly.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the governor takes swift action on Florida's water quality woes, but will the legislature play along?
This needed to be dealt with, and so I came in and basically just did what I said.
So much need, not enough help. North Florida continues to struggle in the wake of last October's Hurricane Michael.
Federal government needs to do a declaration of resources to North Florida to help with the repairs and the rebuilding.
At the same time, getting to safety during a hurricane is at the top of the Senate president's priority list.
I think we can improve evacuation access to our rural communities.
And this could be the year Florida's legislature finally resolves a long-running battle between insurance companies and contractors.
My staff doesn't like it when I call them scoundrels because, I mean, technically, we've got a law on the books that is being legally exploited.
The Republican-controlled legislature will be tasked with an unexpected job, deciding whether to allocate funds for environmental causes championed by the governor. The environment wasn't a priority under former Governor Rick Scott. Florida's new governor, Ron DeSantis, is taking a different approach and raising eyebrows as he seeks massive dollars to clean up the state's waterways. Gina Jordan reports the legislature may not be quick to go along with his funding request.
2 days after he was sworn into office, Governor Ron DeSantis signed an executive order. Among other things, it calls for $2.5 billion over the next 4 years to help solve environmental concerns.
That represents $1 billion more than the previous 4 years.
Specifically, DeSantis wants $625 million to focus on water quality and Everglades restoration. He immediately touted his plan on a visit to coastal areas that have been ravaged by red tide.
I mean, a lot of times people get into office, oh, then what are we going to do? What policy? We knew we wanted to do this very early. We didn't want to waste any time.
His proposal quickly found support from business and environmental groups. Rob Moher is president of Conservancy of Southwest Florida.
We have a great expression, never let a good crisis go to waste. I think this governor is just coming in at the right time and has a coalition, a broad coalition of support, regardless of political party, regardless what sector you're in, private, nonprofit. We all have to pull together in the same direction.
DeSantis has taken other action, like appointing new members to the state's regional water boards in an attempt to remove politics from the decision-making. He told reporters at the Capitol he's following through on comments made during his campaign that Florida's water quality issues need to be addressed.
All you had to do was go down to Southwest Florida, see the empty restaurants, you see the empty beaches, you see what's happened with the algae and then the red tide, which I think maybe have been exacerbated by what happens out of Lake Okeechobee. So this needed to be dealt with, and so I came in and basically just did what I said.
But will lawmakers go along with his sweeping plans as they craft the state budget? Part of the governor's proposal would require the state to create a matching grant program for converting septic systems to sewer. Local governments would put up the matching money, potentially leading property owners to abandon their septic tanks. House Speaker Jose Oliva thinks that might not be the best solution.
I think we have to find ways that are not a massive imposition on either property owners or local governments or the state government, but it's truly a combination of everyone having some skin in the game.
Some lawmakers are pushing their own environmental bills that could compete with the governor's plans. Senate President Bill Galvano of Bradenton says he's interested in an initiative out of Moat Marine Laboratory in Sarasota for red tide research, since he's encountered red tide for much of his life.
And I watched the impact on the communities, just like Anna Maria, where my family first moved in the beginning. And while we have provided research for red tide through in the past, it's time to collaborate more and look towards solutions to mitigate.
Galvano says he's pleased the governor is making water quality a priority.
But we have to realize that the governor has the ability to make recommendations to the legislature, and we are taking those recommendations seriously, but we have to go through our own budget process.
In other words, it'll be up to state lawmakers to decide whether it's feasible to fund the governor's budget requests. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Gina Jordan.
According to the calendar, it's been nearly 5 months since Hurricane Michael slammed into the Florida panhandle. For Jody Mosley, who lives in Marianna, it seems for far too many people that the storm never really left.
a family of four, a single mother with three kids, and she's so scared that she's going to lose her kids because she doesn't have a home. And there's so many people that have lost hope because they're not getting any kind of help from FEMA. I mean, it's just, it's unreal and it's heartbreaking. And I don't think that anybody was really prepared. Nobody thought that it was going to come this far inland, and it did.
Former Florida Emergency Management Director Brian Kuhn says the storm's winds topped out at just below Category 5 intensity. That and the storm system's incredibly low barometric pressure made it the third strongest hurricane to strike the U.S. mainland in modern times.
That was a terrific storm in terms of the wind speed, in terms of the storm surge, a catastrophic storm by any way that you measure it. The only redeeming factor of Michael was that it hit probably the most rural part of the state. Had that occurred anywhere else in the state or in parts of the country, it may have been the most devastating hurricane on record of the United States in terms of property damage and lives lost.
That, of course, is no comfort for the people in North Florida and beyond who are still reeling from Michael. And as Mariana's Jody Mosley pointed out a moment ago, help from the federal government hasn't begun to make a dent. Gwen Graham knows a bit about the federal government. From 2015 until 2017, she was the congressperson for the region impacted by Michael. She admits assistance from Washington hasn't met the need, and she faults private sector relief as well.
But insurance companies, I hear, you know, they're just not even coming close to providing the resources necessary to rebuild a home or a business. I was talking to a business in Bay County a couple days ago that said, you know, we've had to hire a lawyer. So on top of the devastation and the trauma that folks have gone through, they're now having to fight it out with their insurance companies, and it's really tough.
Which leads us back to the traditional responsibility of government to help those in trouble through no fault of their own when no one else will. That point was made by Tony. He called into WFSU's Perspectives talk show while Graham and Kuhn were on the air.
I think our government should stand more than what we see. You know, you see it every storm from Texas to Katrina. It's just our government is so slow to respond.
Gwen Graham says she's been in touch with the man, now the district's congressional representative, Neil Dunn from Panama City.
The federal government needs to do a declaration of resources to North Florida to help with the repairs and the rebuilding that's going to be ongoing for a very, very long time. And I think that from what I understand, though it wasn't done in the latest appropriations to keep the government open, that it is something that he's working on.
Although Graham acknowledges, with Congress so tangled up over President Trump's attempt to find sources of funds for his southern border wall, the needs of North Florida may not be high on the agenda. Meanwhile, as the Florida legislature gets ready to convene for the 2019 session, there are pressures to include Hurricane Michael recovery money in the budget. But even if that happens, the money won't be available until the next fiscal year. In the meantime, there is the organization both Graham and Kuhn are a part of called Rebuild 850, the number a reference to the region's telephone area code. Graham says it's collecting money and other resources through an established vehicle.
Those funds are being taken in by Volunteer Florida because we felt that that was the best way to make sure that the resources were specifically being used for Rebuild 850. So we're working with all of our partners to distribute the resources. For instance, during the holidays, we were able to do a toy drive, and that's a wonderful opportunity that we have in this position of Rebuild 850.
But privately, everyone connected with North Florida's hurricane recovery admits it'll take a lot more than toys and good intentions to bring the region even part of the way back from the present catastrophe. Florida Senate President Bill Galvano is paving the way for a new transportation plan as the legislative session kicks into gear. But as Regan McCarthy reports, a bumpy road could lie ahead.
After a decade-long reprieve, Florida's luck has faded. The state has faced direct hits or near misses from hurricanes for the last few years. And as those storms move toward the state, Senate President Bill Galvano says Floridians need a better way to get to safety.
I think we can improve evacuation access to our rural communities, multi-purpose corridor access.
Galvano has identified three areas where he'd like to see improvement: extending the Suncoast Parkway and Florida Turnpike, as well as building the Heartland Parkway, all of which are toll roads. Galvano says the new changes would also make room for more growth. He says Florida's population has grown and its infrastructure needs to keep pace.
You know, if we're talking about 850 people a day, and that's a city a little larger than the size of Orlando every year coming on. And that's why, I feel like infrastructure, and when I talk about infrastructure, I'm not just talking about roadways. I multi-purpose, because you have to have the water availability, sewer, all of these issues. And we are challenged by our own success.
Galvano wants to use $75 million from the Transportation Trust Fund to pay for researching and developing the projects.
What I think is necessary is that we recognize that we need this access and these corridors for myriad reasons, and that we get on a steady track. And the beginning of that is to, take funds that are currently in GR that were designated for infrastructure and put them back into the Transportation Trust Fund.
But Governor Ron DeSantis says he's sensitive to the idea of expanding or building new toll roads. During a question and answer session last month in Miami, DeSantis said his transportation plan would put taxpayers first and focus on relieving congestion, particularly in the South and Central Florida areas.
We really want to focus our transportation strategy on alleviating all the congestion in places like South Florida and Central Florida, which has really, really been bad. And then we want to embrace innovation.
Meanwhile, Galvano says he looks forward to working with the governor and expects to see more collaboration than he says he saw with the last administration. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, if you thought we'd be wrapping up the show on a nice non-adversarial note, a kind of kumbaya sort of piece, think again. Florida's insurance industry has tried for years to rein in a practice known as assignment of benefits, where a property owner signs over payment of a claim directly to a contractor or service provider. Lynn Hatter reports the fight is back, this time spearheaded by State Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Petronis.
My staff doesn't like it when I call them scoundrels, and because, I mean, technically we've got a law on the books that is being legally exploited.
Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Petronis says some contractors have abused the system by filing exorbitant claims. And Barry Gilway, head of Citizens Property Insurance Corporation, says he's seeing insurance companies leave the state as a result.
In Dayton Broward, there are probably 8 or 9 major companies that have simply stopped writing business. They don't write new business, and some of them are going as far as to non-renew the business they have within the Tri-County area. So if you're not from Tri-County, why should you be worried? Well, because that is spreading graphically, as I will show you on the next slide, across the state.
And in our opinion, this is a problem that's isolated to a very small number of people, but the way that it's being abused is causing some awfully large problems for our consumers.
David Altmaier heads the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation. The problems manifest themselves in higher insurance premiums and fewer companies underwriting. AOB has been around forever. Take medicine, for example. Every time a person goes to a doctor's office, they're likely signing an AOB to let the doctor deal directly with the insurer. Only within the last several years has the state seen problems related to the practice. And Altmaier says those problems are showing up mostly in one area of insurance loss, water claims.
46% more water claims in 2015 than there was in 2010. The severity of those claims from 2010 to 2015 increased by almost 28%. There's 46% more claims that cost 26% more than they originally did.
Leaky pipes, water heaters breaking down, and roofing issues can all fall within water loss claims. Problems like that can happen in an instant. One place homeowners are likely to turn is to a company like Tallahassee's Bone Dry to help them air everything out.
Pretty much, I'm your house doctor.
Owner Jeff Grant spoke to WFSU 2 years ago as the legislature again attempted and failed to pass an AOB reform package. He says sometimes having a homeowner sign an AOB is the only way to guarantee a company like his can get paid.
Most of the time, they're back together and living their lives, the client. And we haven't been paid one dime. And then they want to come and say, here, this is 50 cents on the dollar. Take that, or, you know, pound sand.
They are the insurance companies. In situations like water loss, payments often come after services have been delivered. Grant says AOB gives him recourse when insurance companies drag their feet. He's able to sue them. Terry Perkins is a state of Florida retiree. And during a 2015 hearing on AOB, he told lawmakers he did file a claim with his insurance company, but he got lowballed.
I was first offered $6,100 to repair the damage. I checked with several local contractors. Several of them, they didn't laugh at me, but it was like, you can't get this work done for that amount. I ultimately settled for $32,000, and I can get the work done for that amount.
State Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Petronas seems to understand that point.
I have challenged the insurance carriers through multiple conference calls and just demanding to them, do your job, pay the claims, answer the phone calls, take care of the customer. If that is being done, if we're doing that, then the consumer who is under duress is not looking for solutions that are outside the normal insurance process.
This year, the Florida legislature is once again targeting assignment of benefits, this time with an eye on attorney's fees. A Senate proposal would make it so only the policyholder can recoup fees. The idea is to make AOB less attractive to bad actors seeking to exploit the system. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaze Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Ken Smith, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Starting next Tuesday, March 5th, Capitol Report will be aired each weekday evening throughout the Florida lawmaking session on many of these Florida public radio stations. We hope you'll join us then for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.